Okay, so you're knee-deep in contracts right now,
Yeah.
and probably like every law student before you, wondering like when does someone actually break a contract?
Yeah, good question, right?
Especially when the agreement doesn't exactly lay it all out like a step-by-step.
Exactly.
Well, buckle up, because today we're diving into a case that shines a light on exactly that.
Love it.
We're talking Bell v. Elder, a 1989 decision from the Utah Court of Appeals.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's pretty fundamental for understanding concurrent conditions and this whole concept of tender of performance.
You got it.
So basically, we're going to break down when not doing something actually equals a breach,
Right.
especially when the contract is kind of vague about who has to do what first.
It's all about those nuances, right?
Totally. And trust me, these are the kind of details that can win or lose a case.
Absolutely.
So to really get into it, we've got through a lot of material for you guys.
Yeah, we did our homework.
Detailed case briefs, summaries, a perplexity analysis even.
The whole nine yards.
So yeah, consider us your guides through this legal jungle.
That's us.
All right, let's set the scene a little. It's 1977. The Bells, they want to buy 10 acres from the Elders for $25,000.
Okay. Sounds simple enough.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, contract law rarely stays simple for long.
That's the truth.
So the contract says the elders got to bring in water, electricity, roads to the property by July 1978.
So pretty clear obligation on their part, right?
Seems like it.
But wait, there's a twist in the contract.
Always is.
It says if the Bells can't get a building permit by that July 1978 deadline, the elders have 6 months to refund them.
Interesting. So this little clause gives us a hint about what the land was actually for, right?
Exactly. Like, what were they planning to do with it?
All right.
Makes you think.
Definitely seems like the Bells had development on their
For
minds.
sure.
And maybe the elders knew that too.
Yeah, you never know.
Okay, so fast forward a couple of years, there's this supplemental agreement, and they push the utilities deadline to October 15, 1980.
All right, so new deadline.
New deadline. And here's where it gets juicy. By this final deadline, the elders hadn't actually installed the water lines.
But hold on. The elders, they were actually ready and capable of providing that water.
Right. They had the system ready, just not the final hookup to each of the 10 acres.
Interesting. And what were the Bells up to at this point?
Yeah, good question.
Hadn't applied for a building permit.
Really?
Nope. Hadn't paid any water hookup fees.
Wow. Okay.
And in fact, they were living somewhere else entirely.
So they weren't even on the property.
Not even close.
And, you know, the zoning of the land plays a role here, too. It's kind of a silent factor, but important.
Right. Zoning always matters.
It was designated for agricultural use,
Okay.
only one house per 10 acres.
So you can see maybe why the Bells might have wanted to do more with the
Yeah,
land.
like subdivide it or something.
Right, exactly. But they never even applied for a permit for what was allowed under the zoning.
Interesting. So they didn't even try to take the first step.
Nope.
Oh.
So deadline passes, no water physically there, and the Bells, they sue to get out of the contract, get their money back.
Makes sense they're thinking the elders breached their obligation to provide water, right?
Exactly.
So that brings us to the big question the Utah Court of Appeals had to figure out.
The main issue.
Yeah, they had two things to decide. Basically, first, did the elders not delivering the water by the 1980 deadline mean they breached the contract?
Right, that's number one.
And second, was the Bells getting a building permit, like a must-do, before the elders even had to install the
Yeah,
utilities?
like a prerequisite.
Exactly.
So lots to unpack there.
Lots to consider.
The court weighs it all out, and here's the decision.
Drum roll, please.
No breach by the elders.
Wow.
The Bells claims dismissed, case closed, right?
Not so fast.
That's just the verdict. The real learning is understanding why the court ruled that way.
You got it.
And it all comes down to this legal concept of concurrent conditions.
All right, so concurrent conditions, what are we talking about here?
Okay, so imagine a contract where both sides have things they got to do around the same time. But the contract doesn't say who goes first. That's where concurrent conditions come in.
Like they're meant to happen together.
Simultaneously.
Got it.
Think of it like buying something at a store.
Okay, I like this.
You don't hand over the cash and then wait weeks for your item, right?
No way.
And the store doesn't just give you the item and say, pay us later.
Right, it all happens at the same time.
It's a simultaneous exchange.
Okay, I'm with you.
So back to Bell v. Elder. The court looked at the contract and they didn't see anything that specifically said the elders had to install the utilities before the Bells did anything to develop the land, like getting a permit.
Right.
So they saw these actions as intended to happen concurrently.
Makes sense.
And here's a crucial point that the court highlighted.
The key takeaway.
Neither party can claim breach without tendering their own performance.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right. Powerful stuff.
It is.
Basically, you can't say, hey, you didn't hold up your end of the deal.
Right.
If you haven't even shown that you're ready and willing to do your part.
You got to come to the table ready to play.
Exactly. The court said the elders had to be capable of providing the water, and the evidence showed they were
ready to go.
They didn't have to have every single pipe in place for land that wasn't even being developed.
Right. Like, why go through all that if it's not being used?
That's the question.
It's about being prepared, not necessarily doing everything beforehand.
Exactly.
So that brings us to tender of performance.
Okay, let's break that down. What does that mean in this case, particularly for a buyer like the Bells?
All right. So tender of performance, it's more than just saying, hey, I'm ready.
Right. It's got to be more than words.
It's about showing you're ready and willing to do your part of the contract.
Tangible action.
Exactly. So for the Bells, this would mean applying for that building permit, paying those water hookup fees.
Proving they're ready to hold up their end of the bargain.
Exactly. It's like saying, here I am, I'm ready, let's do this.
So why is this tender so important in a situation like this?
Because it basically shifts the responsibility to the other party.
Ah, oh, I see.
If you've shown you're ready to act and they don't, then you have a much stronger argument that they're the ones in breach.
Makes sense.
In this case, the Bells, they never take those steps. They didn't tender their performance.
And the court really focused on that lack of action by the Bells?
They did.
It's like they were saying, why should the elders install all this water infrastructure when the Bells aren't even ready to use it?
Right. It wouldn't make sense.
The briefs call this avoiding purposeless performance.
Yeah. You don't want to make someone do something that's ultimately pointless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to the intended use of the property the utilities were for a house.
Right.
And without any move by the Bells to build anything, the full installation wasn't really necessary.
Wasn't triggered yet.
Not yet.
Now, there's also a really interesting procedural side to this case.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Especially for you future litigators out there.
This is for you.
The briefs mention how the Bells didn't really do a good job of marshaling evidence on appeal.
Okay, so what does that even mean? And why should a law student care?
It's all about understanding how appeals work.
Right, the process.
When you're appealing a decision, you can't just say the lower court was wrong.
Uh-huh.
You have to be specific, point to the evidence, and explain why it contradicts the trial court's findings.
Ah, so you can't just complain. You have to back it up.
You got it. And appellate courts, they tend to trust the trial court's findings unless you properly challenge them with specific references to the record.
It's about being organized and precise.
Exactly. And the Bells, they didn't do that effectively, which really hurt their appeal.
So for all you law students out there, think of it like this. You got to be meticulously organized with your case file.
Right.
And be able to point the appellate court directly to the proof that the trial court messed up.
It's all about the details.
It is.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit. What are the big takeaways from Bell v. Elder? What should law students really remember?
The key points.
First and foremost, this case shows us why clear language in contracts is so important.
Absolutely.
If you want things to happen in a specific order, you got to spell it out.
Make it crystal clear.
Don't leave it up to the courts to figure it out. Ambiguity just leads to disputes like this one.
Right. Ambiguity is the enemy of good contracts.
Exactly. And for those of you interested in real estate law.
Yeah, future real estate lawyers.
This case shows how the intended use of the property can really affect how courts interpret contracts related to development and utilities.
The zoning restrictions played a role, even though they weren't the main issue.
Absolutely. They definitely influenced how the court saw the whole situation.
And maybe the most practical takeaway for anyone dealing with contracts or litigation.
This is a good one.
Make sure your client has done what they're supposed to do before you start accusing the other party of breaching the contract.
Right. Come to court with clean hands.
Clean hands.
Be prepared to show you've done everything required of you.
Solid advice.
It is.
Okay, now let's throw out a hypothetical here just to get you thinking.
I love hypotheticals.
What if the Bells had actually applied for a building permit but got denied because of that zoning issue? Remember, the zoning only allowed one house per 10 acres.
Right, and they probably wanted to build more.
Exactly. And there's that clause about the elders having to repay if a permit couldn't be obtained.
Uh-huh.
So would that denial trigger that repayment obligation?
That's a great question. It really makes us think about what obtainable means.
What does it really mean?
Right, because if the permit was denied because of a fundamental issue with the land itself.
A limitation.
Yeah, something the elders should have known about. Then there's a strong argument that the permit wasn't really obtainable under the law.
It's like the land itself prevented it.
Exactly, and in that case, that repayment clause might have been triggered changing the whole outcome.
So the details really matter.
They do. They can completely change the outcome.
It's fascinating how different facts can lead to totally different legal results.
It is.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Bell v. Elder, what's the main message we want you to take away?
What should they remember?
The big one.
All right, law students, listen up. You gotta understand how concurrent conditions work and how important it is to tender your own performance.
Those are the two biggies.
In contracts where the order of things isn't clear, you can't just sit back and wait for the other party to act.
Right. You got to be proactive.
You have to show you're ready, willing, and able to do your part before you can claim they breached the contract.
Show them you're ready to go.
Exactly.
Keep these principles in mind, not just for your contracts class, but also when you start drafting agreements and thinking about litigation strategies.
Right. Real world application.
Understanding these details can save your clients a lot of trouble down the line.
Time, money, headaches, you name it.
It's worth it.
It is.
So as you continue to explore the world of contract law.
Yeah, keep learning.
Always remember.
What's the big one?
Sometimes what you don't do
speaks
volumes.
Sometimes even louder than what you do.
That's the truth.
It is.